This is exciting, you know, because I think I'm a huge fan of DeFi, as they call it, decentralized finance. So I'm really excited to talk about that with you, Thomas and Yanika. But before we get going, if you two want to sort of introduce yourself and tell us kind of what you do in that space, let's start with we'll go from left and right. Thomas, if you want to kick this off and tell us about you.
Sure, sounds good. Thanks, Brett. Real big fan of Wix, by the way. I'm Thomas. I'm one of the co-founders of User, that's spelled with a Y, Y-U-S-E-R. Unique and I go a little ways back to about 2017 in the DeFi space. We started working on a project where we kind of wanted to flip the paradigm of how social networks work, and we believed that the decentralized technology at the time was the route to liberating creators from the chains of social networks. So Unique and I partnered to create a social network for creators, basically.
And is it Unica? I think he called you Unique, is that right?
Unica, yeah, it's Unica.
Oh, it's Unica, okay. Tell us a little bit about you, and then I'll sort of go over kind of what the goal for the room.
Yeah, for sure. So again, I'm a co-founder of this mess called User. We have an app that we've been working on for a number of years now. We started within the DeFi space, you know, at the end of 2017, and we've been sort of speaking at different events, conferences, about blockchain and cryptocurrencies and how they're going to change the world. And this is kind of part of what we do. And we're super excited about how blockchain is changing the world of, you know, creatives, especially right now with what's happening with NFTs.
So I'm excited to talk about this because I think it's really interesting. And we're seeing things that I think have really never been seen before. So for those of you who are joining us, let's just sort of set the stage. Thomas and Yanika, let's talk a little bit about what you're seeing in DeFi and where you see it going and what that means for artists. And I kind of want, Thomas, if you want to kind of walk us through the things you want to cover here, I think that's a great place to start. I know you and I sort of had a side conversation. So if there's anything you kind of want to cover, what would you like to cover and in what order?
Sorry, I was still on mute. Yeah, I think one of the things that we can do is we can probably go over a little bit of the history of the last few years of DeFi and what's been happening in the space and why it's important for what's happening now. Because what's happening now is really kind of an evolution of something that started back in late 2017. And that is, of course, the inception of the NFT and the ERC-721 token, as is its technical term. What I do want to cover, though, of course, what everybody, I think, in the creator space is very much so interested in, is understanding things like gas costs, how to maximize the earnings, the difference between regular tokens like Ethereum and then NFTs, and then, of course, how they can go about investing in the space, which is still something that I think confuses a lot of creators because it's not something traditionally creators necessarily sought to do, but it's definitely now, because of NFTs becoming a collectible asset, is something that's been made accessible to a lot of creators, which is really exciting.
Unika, did you want to add?
No, I think that we definitely should talk a little bit about history of NFTs, because I've been jumping into a couple different rooms, and there seems to be still quite a bit of, you know, confusion about like what NFTs actually are. So it would be good to clarify that, so, you know, we can set the stage moving forward, and I think that that's going to open this room for a really, really excellent discussion. So
let's talk about NFTs. I mean, that seems to be the new hotness, Thomas. Every time I come in Clubhouse, there's like 52 rooms, Yanika, where everybody's talking about NFTs. Let's dive into it. let's talk a little bit about what it is and how it's tied in. I think what's really important is how it also ties into DeFinance or decentralized finance, not DeFinance.
Okay, so in very simple terms, let's we've gave this explanation a few times, so hopefully anybody has any questions, please by all means jump into it as well and ask us, because we want to make sure that as many people as possible understand what we're talking about, because Tom and I we can start talking about things and then 20 hours later nobody's listening. So by all means, anybody who has a question, just raise your hands. So if you look at Bitcoin or Ethereum, they're cryptocurrencies and they're essentially what's called fungible tokens. Every Bitcoin is the same as every other Bitcoin. Every Ethereum is every piece of Ether, I forget what the particulars are called, is exactly the same as every other one. Whereas non-fungible tokens, NFTs for short, they're essentially every token is unique, and that is because they contain additional piece of information which stores some data about ownership of an asset. And that doesn't have to be, a digital drawing or a video. It doesn't have to be anything actually related to art. It can just simply be something that you want to sell. It can be your house, it can be a car. Like, that technology is essentially changing how we do contracts. So going back to the basics, this basically means that NFT is a contract, what we call smart contract, which means that it's a contract that's executed on a database level. That is the whole innovation of NFTs, that we can now pass ownership from one person to the next through this digital asset. That is not possible before blockchains happened. So are there any
Well, let me ask you a question, and I'm really deep in the space, and Thomas and Unika, I love the whole idea of DeFi and what they're doing. But before we move into that space, I know we want to talk a little bit about gas, what that is. And let me ask you this, a follow-up, Unika. What's the difference between an NFT and a smart contract? And do they always have to have smart contracts? What's the difference and how do they kind of work together?
So NFT right now, especially on Ethereum blockchain, it's a very specific type of smart contract. And what Tom mentioned is called ERC 721 token, right? So that's, I don't know if people here heard of, CryptoKitties and stuff like that. That was way back, in 2017, 18.
They're still around, Unika.
No, I know that they're still around. But what I was going to say is that, way back when they were first introduced, they basically, clogged up the entire Ethereum blockchain. So it's just like a funny piece of trivia. That's what I was going to say.
I'll just jump in for a sec, Unika. So basically, if you want to fundamentally understand blockchain and why it's important, it's a sequence of blocks that are encrypted, meaning it's a highly secure way of storing data. And decentralized blockchain basically means that instead of data being stored in one data warehouse, say a bank, and a hacker has the ability to hack into that one data warehouse and say change the ledger, such as to say they have a lot of money. Instead of that, everybody holds a copy of this ledger, right? That is participating in making this network, this data network, run, and thus increasing the security, because now you have to hack into a whole bunch of computers in a whole bunch of different places as opposed to one, in order to obviously change the ledger. So a token is essentially like Bitcoin itself as a token is a really interesting way of storing value. But what Ethereum did back when it started was it created smart contracts. So it created a way to store a contract at the database level that kind of brought cryptocurrency to the next level. So the NFT is really the result of that innovation. It's the ability to express a contract at the database level in a highly secured network that various people participate in running between two or more people about anything. Like Unica said, it could be about a house or it could be about your piece of art. And that's what's really cool, is because for the first time now, society has a way of automating the way that we express ownership over things, and we don't necessarily have to rely on a central bank or a central government to do that. That's partly what's revolutionary about it, and a little bit scary.
Well, let's talk about that, okay? I think that's the crux of it. So we've sort of talked a little bit about NFTs, what they are. We didn't really go into gas. I want to talk about DeFi. Before we do that, do you want to touch on gas real quick, just to kind of get the fundamentals for those who may not know out of the way, so we can jump into the real meat and potatoes?
Totally. Yeah. So essentially, because Ethereum is this thing, or you know, various different blockchain decentralized networks are this thing that takes multiple people to run it. One of the reasons why that is because you want validators. Just like if Brett, you and me were to sign a contract that says, you know, I gave you the deed to my house, it would help to increase the integrity of that contract if we had somebody else to come in and observe that contract, a witness, right? That could even sign the contract saying, I witnessed that you two, you know, exchanged the deed to a house. Well, that's essentially what mining is all about. People have heard the term mining. Mining is really the process of third parties participating in a network to validate the transaction between two people, right? And so the mining process, which happens, is really just the effort of a computer to use computational power to solve complex problems that end up validating a transaction. So the reason why there's such a thing as a transaction fee with these types of networks, you'd think like, what? Sounds like anarchists came up with this kind of idea. Like, you know, why are there transaction fees? Well, really,
Visa has transaction fees.
The reason why there are transaction fees is because it's actually an economic system. The transaction fees are the incentive for these third parties to come in and validate the transaction, right? To actually perform the transaction. So the winner of the mining process actually gets the transaction fee. And that's the incentive to make the system work, right? So a lot of artists, of course, are very concerned about gas fees because gas fees are quite high right now, especially on the Ethereum network, which is where most of the NFT transactions are happening. Artists are, you know, musicians and everybody are very frustrated by the fact that it can cost to mint an NFT token. And then, of course, it can cost to perform a transaction, any type of transaction. So I could go into the reason why they're quite high, actually. Should I do that, Brett?
I think that's interesting. And I've seen a lot of tweets and lots of conversations, and there was one that I read today where someone said that it costs $100 to send $100 via the Ethereum network. And I know Ethereum 2.0 is rolling out and it's going to fork soon. And I don't want to get too technical. I think it's also interesting to talk about proof of stake versus proof of work. Those are very interesting topics, but I want to stay away from that because I want to quickly move into DeFi and what that means for artists and how artists can accumulate certain things right now and use that in the future to leverage their assets, digital assets, to get a loan. That's really where the market's moving now. I want to get into that, but if you want to briefly talk on that, why the gas is, that's fine, but I do want to move to the DeFi part quickly.
Sure. So what I do want to say about the gas prices, because we at User, we hear people talking about the gas prices, and it's a very important topic to us because it impacts creators. Often who are getting into this game don't have any ETH, right? So the fact that it costs to actually mint is a huge issue at times. So gas costs, basically, to simplify it as much as I can, increase because the number of transactions that happen on a network, the number of mining validators that you need within the network, essentially, it's kind of like supply and demand, right? So the more that there is a demand and the less there's a supply to perform the transactions, that has an impact on the transaction fees. There's lots of other factors involved as well, but essentially that's a strong point. So what I do want to say though is that there is basically hope, because right now companies like us at User, other companies, even OpenSea, are working on ways of eliminating gas fees. And basically, to state it simply, we're working on ways of which to take batches of transactions, so large amounts of transactions, and taking them temporarily off of the main network of Ethereum onto what's called a side chain. And then we're going to process those transactions and then bring them back onto the main chain. And by doing so, not only can we scale these transactions, make them happen at a much faster rate, but we can actually eliminate gas costs, so transaction fees. So the horizon is quite hopeful here in that fairly soon, I can't give you an exact timeline, there will be a time in which even on Ethereum, we'll be able to eliminate gas fees for all sorts of different types of things.
What's an example of a network that runs to the by the side of Ethereum that does exactly that?
So the one obviously that's catching a lot of attention is it's just escaping my lips. Unica?
Which one are you talking about?
X, what is it?
It's not Polka, is it?
Polkadot is actually a completely different framework from Ethereum, and it is attempting to eliminate transaction fees. We're actually friends with some of the people at Polkadot, and it's an amazing framework, but you have to take note that Polkadot, although it's amazing, it's not quite mature yet for use, and it doesn't quite yet integrate with Ethereum. So you can't quite yet kind of do a lot of the things that you do with Ethereum and NFTs and kind of port that over to Polkadot. There is a project, very exciting project called Moonbeam, who we are working with, that are actually allowing you to take your Ethereum code, if you're a developer, if you're a company, and allow you to work with Polkadot. So Polkadot is really quite cool. Cosmos are trying to do something similar, but there is actually a project on Ethereum. It's a layer 1-2 solution. I'm just forgetting its name, but they are actually attempting to do something similar to what we've been working on since 2018, which is to take stuff onto essentially what's a side chain.
Well, you know, I'm derailing from this conversation, but it's really interesting. And how does that differ from ETH 2.0? I mean, isn't ETH 2.0 supposed to solve all the gas price problems?
It's not. Well, okay, first things first. So ETH 2.0 has been promised since pretty much early 2019. Ethereum is a huge, massive framework, right, and network. And there are a lot of moving pieces, a lot of contributors, and it's amazing. What Plasma has promised for Ethereum is really cool, and there's a lot of really great stuff packaged in ETH 2.0, but when that's going to land, when proof of stake is actually going to land, which you brought up. Again, for everybody, if you hear the term proof of stake, it's the alternative to mining. So mining is actually known as proof of work. proof of stake is known as staking. I know these terms are like, you know,
it's
they sound like nonsense. But essentially what it means is that Ethereum is trying to move away from mining. A lot of you have probably heard about how mining has a negative environmental footprint because of the amount of computational power used from video cards in like data warehouses now to essentially mine these transactions, right? Well, what's really exciting is that Ethereum's moving away from that, and so is a lot of the rest of the blockchain community. And they're moving to something called staking. Basically, the difference is instead of, you know, having a computer to perform these transactions and using as much raw computational power as you can to do it, what you can do now is you can set aside a little bit of your ETH in your wallet and you stake it. Basically, what that means is that it says that you're participating in a sort of contest to win the transaction fees. You get put into a staking pool whenever a transaction needs to be made. And long story short, you each get a chance to kind of win the transaction fee. But it's not using heavy computational power to do it. So now, if anybody who's concerned about the environmental footprint of Ethereum, just take note that as Ethereum moves to proof of stake or staking, it's going to reduce its environmental footprint by 98.9%. It's going to be arguably, theoretically, more energy efficient than Visa's current network.
Thomas, I could probably sit here and nerd out with you for hours. It's dangerous. So I need to stay on target here. This is hard because this is interesting to me. We've talked about NFTs, what they are. We talked a little bit about gas. Let's talk about DeFi, decentralized finance. And let's talk about BlockFi. Let's talk about Kraken and Gemini, where I can park my coins, my 10,000 Bitcoins. I'm just kidding. If I had that much, I'd probably be on the moon. But where I can park my coins and get a percentage on that. And this is interesting. And not only that, Thomas, but you can now get a loan for your coins. This is interesting. So it's no longer a personal loan based on credit. It's a loan based on an asset, which sort of changes the game for a lot of people. Where do you see this going? Is that going to be the future?
Well, it already is, even in some countries where banking is inaccessible to a large amount of people. One of the interesting things that we started to see happen in late 2017 and 2018 was a lot of blockchain companies started to develop solutions for people in developing world countries that were the unbanked population. And so A lot of people here are first being introduced to the idea of a sort of blockchain loan or BlockFi, et cetera. But it's actually already starting to happen in other countries where people don't have access to bank accounts. So it's what's interesting about it is that, yeah, you can take, for instance, one very simple function. There's a function in the Ethereum network. And I know this sounds kind of crazy because it's like, what are the computers doing it? But really, it's actually the network and not a central bank that is actually responsible for giving out loans. And yeah, you can get a loan from the Ethereum network. And I know that sounds kind of like cyberpunk.
How does that work? What does it take to get involved with that? And is it possible if I buy a piece of art from Unika and it turns out that she's an absolute badass, and in 3 years I spent $100 on an original piece that turns into $100,000, can I leverage that over the Ethereum network? How does that work?
Well, long story short, yes. There's a relatively simple function called Compound, and we're using it right now with User. We're going to be providing people that join the network and decide to kind of stake their wallet or Ethereum in their wallet. They can put it in a Compound. And Compound's really cool because essentially what it is it's a way of investing your money in a bank loan system or pool. So like banks work typically, right? They have a whole bunch of collateral, right? Cash that they set aside. And then they say to their, you know, everybody that participates in the bank that if you want to invest in the bank, you can earn some interest. What we're going to do is we're going to loan up money to people. But we have this collateral sitting here, which all this cash, which is more than the money that's being loaned out in order to secure, you know, this loan process, right? But then what they do is they create an opportunity for people to earn a little bit of interest over time as they collect the loans and then the interest on those loans, and they pay back to anybody that's put money into the system, right, to help the loaning. So the Ethereum network does the same thing. There are various different ways in which money can be loaned, but there are essentially investors in these loan pools, and Compound is one way to do it. And so, yeah, if you wanted to, you could either invest in one of these pools or you could be one of the individuals of which to receive a loan. But again, I'm not too sure on the particulars of using NFT assets right now in the loaning process, but I know there's a lot of different companies working in the space trying to make it as easy as possible. But you can definitely, of course, you know, decide to sell your asset for ERC-721 tokens if you want to, and then use that as collateral as well. But I could definitely see, if it's not happening already, it's going to happen very soon, that you're going to be able to use any asset to leverage, you know, a loan.
So. Yeah, I see that happening. And so there's really two things here that I picked up on. One, and Yunica, feel free to jump in whenever you want. One, I think taking your currency in Ethereum, let's say I make a really dope track where I sell for X ETH. I'm going to write a special lyric about Yunica, and I'm going to work her into the track, and you can buy it for X, and then I do that, and then that kind of becomes a personalized thing. I get that Ethereum. Maybe it's an Ethereum. Maybe it's multiple Ethereum, and I can, as you said, I can sort of invest that where an entity will give me interest on my Ethereum. Am I paid? That's one way, and I've got a follow-up question for that. And then the second way is
an infinite royalty.
An infinite. I'm liking this word infinite. So, and the second thing here is also to be able to take my assets and convert that into dollars. I've got a question for each of those. First, when I take a loan for my Ethereum, and this is real important for a lot of people, who owns the private keys when I receive a loan? That's an interesting question. So if I use my assets to convert for a loan for, let's say I have 5 Ethereum and I want a $2,000 loan, who gains the private key? Do I have to give the private key to the third party, or is there a contract that it can be wrapped in? I'm just curious.
Do you want to take that one, Yunica, or should I?
I'm not exactly sure, because like I know that when you're pulling the money or when you're staking it, it gets looked up, but I'm not sure if it actually gets like. I'm not sure if it gets stored outside of your wallet. Do you know? Like, I am actually not sure on that question.
Yeah, it actually does. So one of the things about Compound or any other type of function, whether it's investing or it's loaning, et cetera, is it depends. Like some companies are trying to push stuff to happen off chain, like I said, to reduce transaction fees. But it technically does cost, it's kind of like the bank. You're giving the money to the bank, right? Or you're giving somebody sorry, Brett, can you rewind? What was the exact question again?
Well, so the question is when I see this going in a lot of different ways. So my question may be ahead of my thought process. My question is, if I want to take a loan out for my asset, but not actually convert my asset to dollars. Let's say I've got 20 Ethereum, but I don't want to go to a marketplace and sell 5 Ethereum to get a quick $10,000. What I'd rather do is set aside 5,000 or 5 Ethereum and get $5,000. That's what I would prefer to do as a loan. So my question for you is, when I convert in a DeFi situation as a loan, which I know they can do, do they own the private keys, or do I retain the private keys on the Ethereum network with a smart contract that default?
You don't have to explain, you don't have to exchange any private keys. What's happening is that the smart contract on the network actually locks the NFT so that nobody can actually take it until certain conditions are met. And I know that sounds kind of funny. It's like, well, you know, like, is it locked in a room? Like, what? Technically, the smart contract locks it so that it can't be used.
So my Ethereum is locked in this NFT.
It's locked in the smart contract. Yeah.
Now that's interesting, Thomas. That's interesting. So, and just to sort of let everybody know, you can go to certain places like BlockFi, and you can deposit your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, and whatever else, and they'll pay you a percentage. But a lot of people are concerned because they don't own their private keys in that instance. But if in the Ethereum network, what you're talking about is with DeFi, you can have a smart contract written, your Ethereum is bundled into that smart contract, and it doesn't belong to either party until one or all or whatever of the conditions are met. So if I say, look, Thomas, I need $5,000 today because I've got to pay some stuff, but I don't want to go to market and sell my Ethereum. We could generate a smart contract and you could say, okay, Brett, I'll give you $5,000 for 10 Ethereum collateral. And let's write a contract, and as long as you pay me on time, you'll get your Ethereum at the end of it, and I get my 5 or 10% or whatever it is at the end of that. That's really interesting. That changes the game.
Well, I think one of the things that changes the game, hopefully for musicians, artists, creators, etc., is that now there's the possibility that you could use an NFT asset. I remember, I'm a musician, so I remember, traveling, doing gigs, and, not having a whole lot of spare cash, you know, and waiting on the next gig, you know, at the next town to get the cash from the door. And, so what you're traveling with, your musical gear, your keyboards, your records, whatever, those are your assets. But even stronger than that is your music, is your content, is what you create, your craft, right? And so what we're entering into is a huge new opportunity where now it's not just like back in the 80s, you know, record labels could own your music and they could monetize it, right? And I'm not dissing music labels. There's great music labels that have done great things for artists and so on and so forth. But now we're in a time where you don't even necessarily need cash. You could have an asset, which is, say, that song that you crafted that you could either crowdfund, you know, the creation of a new album from, or you could use it as collateral for a loan, right? So it really does change the game. Now all of a sudden, banking or finance becomes something that could be far more accessible to that many more people. Sometimes, you know, honestly, many musicians and artists have been poor throughout their career, and often because the tools of finance have been regulated to, you know, banks and and financiers, and nothing against banks per se, but yeah, it's a really cool time to be in.
Yeah, I think Picasso was the only one who didn't die poor. You know, of all the artists that I know, or painters rather. So, but Thomas, this is really interesting. So, for an artist that's starting out, that's getting into the NFT space, and they're minting, and they're getting paid in Ethereum, what's your recommendation? Should they take that Ethereum to the bank and convert it on an exchange and pocket that money? Should they invest in it? Should they put it into a pool, like you said? What would you recommend for somebody who wants to sort of start building that wealth?
I'm not going to give financial advice. That is a disclaimer. I am not giving financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I recommend to speak to a financial advisor, or speak to your partner or your family or whomever else you're responsible and accountable to before making financial decisions. However, if you are in a situation whereby you don't necessarily need to use your Ethereum to pay the bills at the very moment, and I know for artists and musicians, that's often not the case, right? You earn something, you spend something, right? And I'm not just talking about, you know, disposable income, we're talking about survival, right? But I know a lot of talking to a lot of artists, creators, musicians, etc., that are, you know, starting to get into the collectibles, and they're starting to bank on the NFTs that they're collecting, and you know, they're waiting for the next big item that they might be able to get at a low dollar, and then hopefully one day they can, you know, they can make something on, and that's fantastic. And you know, I know that some people are criticizing artists and musicians for getting into the games of collectors, but I mean, isn't it time that artists and musicians get their fair shake? Isn't it time that artists and musicians can be in a similar position to a lot of collectors? So the same thing goes. If you look at your finances right now and there's a little bit that you can set aside, there are a lot of ways in which right now you could invest your Ethereum and potentially down the road, make a bit of cash. And yeah, it's a really exciting time, because I think now we're probably going to see, and have within the last few months, the first time where a lot of musicians and artists finally now can invest and make money themselves from their investments.
Yunica, I would like to invite you to, I know you're not a financial advisor, but what would you like to add to this? This is a very new and interesting field, and like Thomas says, it's happening now, but I really feel like this is really new. Finance is not new, but decentralized finance is. What do you think, Yunica?
So there's a couple of things. Like, I'm listening to you guys during this conversation, and it's super, super good that we're talking about this. There's a few different things that, you know, I am thinking as I'm listening to this, is that first of all, you know, a lot of people are thinking like, am I late to the game? Am I late to the game? Here are some numbers. Adoption of cryptocurrency right now in the US is 6%. That's the adoption. So anybody in this room, anybody who's finding out about this, you're not late to the game. People are still early. This technology is still so early. But then when you look at, you know, some developing countries, there are some countries in Africa where adoption of cryptocurrency is actually at 30%. And the reason for this is, like, you know, what Tom mentioned, is the there is lack of access to banking, and there is a lack of access to, you know, accessible loans. People don't have traditional assets to put as collaterals to get loans. And this is why access to something like, you know, what we're talking about, being able to put different types of assets, such as NFTs, you know, as a collateral, or even get cryptocurrencies and, you know, put them in a pool and all sorts of stuff like that, that creates different opportunities for people that were not there before. And I think that, you know, even in sort of first world countries like in North America, a lot of traditional assets, you know, or you have a car or you have a house, there's all these assets that you can put down as a collateral. But what about intellectual property? And the problem with intellectual property right now is that if you're creating any sort of digital content and it's put online, it gets so easily pirated that you almost feel like you've made nothing, you know, and that is what I think is, I think this is why NFTs are specifically taking off in this area that pertains to, you know, artists, musicians, creators, anybody who's created content. Like, I've already been part of some rooms here on Clubhouse where people are complaining about the fact that we're, you know, contributing to this app. We're putting so much attention and so much, you know, hours into this app, but we're not getting paid. What's up with that? You know, so people are starting to understand that their time is their value, and everything that they're creating online, be it, you know, digital content, like right now, this is being recorded, we're creating digital content, that there are opportunities to monetize this type of stuff beyond what was there before. And I think that for me in particular, that's very exciting.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. Thomas, do you want to add to that?
Well, that was put very succinctly, but yeah, I think the reason why Unique and I started down this path or with User in 2017, I mean, we were part of a really wild ride in 2018 where we saw the sort of first boom of the cryptocurrency era. And we thought, you know, at the time that the world was ready for change. It wasn't quite ready yet, but I think it's ready now. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that obviously we've gone through a horrible pandemic, a horrible recession that's impacted the entire world in an unprecedented way. And it's kind of forced us to really seriously rethink how we do things. And lo and behold, there's a lot of people that have been working very hard in this space to develop a technology to help empower people in new and interesting ways. And NFTs is just one facet of this huge transformation that's taking place. And I'm glad to see that it's happening now, and that we can, you know, in some shape or form play some sort of role. It's a wonderful time.
I agree. I think it's new. I think it's interesting. And I think a lot of it is very speculative, but I'm really excited. You know, Unique, when you were talking about people getting mortgages, or loans on their house, it's not uncommon for people to get a mortgage or a second mortgage on their house. I in the future, I don't think it's going to be uncommon for people to just get a loan on their digital currency, right? I don't think we're too far off from that, Thomas and Unique. I think it's really interesting. So I want to invite anybody up that has any questions that maybe I didn't ask that they want to ask. It's open to the audience. So anybody who's listening, just raise your hand. But in far of these, so Thomas, I want to ask you a different question. As far as maybe getting a loan for your currency, how do you feel versus one of the entities like Gemini, BlockFi versus something else? And what does something else look like? I'm just curious.
By something else, do you mean something new and different, or what?
is there an alternative that's different from BlockFi, one of these big third-party bank-esque entities for cryptocurrencies, or is there another way to do it, to receive a loan, or do you have to go through one of those third parties?
Well, it's things are changing very fast. Probably as we speak, Brett, somebody is developing the NFT loan process that we just talked about. I think back in 2017, one of our co-founders and I, Mitch, we were talking about the possibility of using NFTs to basically sell artwork. And at the time we were talking about it very specifically about how you could use an NFT to share ownership of artwork that hangs in a museum. So the museum could hang the artwork of which they partly own, but then a group of people could share ownership of it and thus also share the time through which they could, you know, use that artwork, hang it in their homes and such. And lo and behold, you know, CryptoKitties happened just next. So things are happening really fast. So even if you don't feel comfortable right now with any of the existing solutions, I tell you, there's going to be new ones popping up very soon. I know people that are working on stuff and I can't comment on it. But particularly when it comes to decentralized finance, I would say some of the new frameworks out there are working on some really cool stuff. Polkadot, not saying about anything specifically, but Polkadot is really well positioned to allow the development of new blockchains. That's actually what Polkadot is. It's a framework to just create new blockchains. So there's going to be a lot of cool, new, interesting projects coming out of there. I don't want to give any specific recommendations as to where to necessarily go get a loan right now, but there are a few right now, but there's going to be a lot more, especially over the next year.
I just want
just
to speak to, you know, what Tom was getting at. It's very difficult because of how new everything is. So, you know, it took a while even for a platform like Ethereum to become what it is, which is, you know, a robust ecosystem of people sort of believing in the platform, and that's what gives it value. So I feel like with decentralized technologies, you kind of really have to take your pick and you have to see what stands the test of time, because there's certain platforms that really do have that value that they're adding, and they are able to pull community. So I feel like, you know, we've seen this with Bitcoin, we've seen this with Ethereum, we're starting to see it with perhaps with Polkadot, and there's a couple other projects out there that, you know, are getting bigger and bigger because of the inherent value of the technology that they're working on. I personally find it quite hard, like when you're talking about this, like, you know, secondary services, I find it hard to trust in projects that don't have large communities that have been very new, and especially when they're talking, that, you know, about being decentralized. And if I hear something like, you know, oh, they have my private keys, I'm like, nobody should have your private keys. Don't ever give your private keys. That's no. You know,
don't ever give your private.
Yeah, like if there's one thing that, you know, I can stress on this call, please never do it. Just like, don't even have them on your computer. Just like, have them on a piece of paper, store them in some, you know, somewhere which is not digitized, or, you know, and no, like if there is any, you know, services that are saying, you know, we're going to give you some value if you only give you us access to your wallet in some shape or form, I'm like, no, please don't do it. I would never do it. That's my only advice that I would have to say to that.
Yeah, that's a not good idea. I completely agree. Hi, Camille. Do you have a question you'd like to ask our panelists? Well,
hi, everyone. Yes, I do have a question. And thank you so much for everyone's time here. It's been really interesting to hear y'all's take on the DeFi sector, especially on its effects on musicians and artists and all of that, and with NFTs. So my question is mostly around, again, this concept of loans, right? And where I think I lack education, and I would love some more perspective, is how, if you feel that we, as these new explorers, these pioneers the brand new world that is crypto and blockchain and NFTs, if we're doing enough to protect from kind of those traditional trappings of our traditional finance system. And where my mind went to whilst I was listening to y'all speak was around microfinancing and the microfinance loans that was, you know, championed in 2006 as this new great development to help the poor get better access to loans and to credit systems that went around the traditional banking systems that they didn't have access to. And it's kind of similar to the things that we've been talking about here. But as we've learned since then, is that those systems that we thought were really good and would alleviate the alleviate a lot of that poverty actually made things worse in most cases. And so I just wanted to hear y'all's thoughts around.
Thank you. That's a wonderful question. That's an amazing question. That's exactly the types of questions that should be asked. Thanks, Camille. Yeah, I hope nobody here works for the IMF or the World Bank. I guess maybe not everybody can raise their hand right now.
Thomas, I used to, but I decided a different life.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the history of you know, the last century has been full of a lot of institutions loaning money only to see that turn into a situation whereby even countries are left, you know, selling all sorts of assets in order to pay those loans back at interest rates they couldn't possibly have afforded. And some of the world's biggest international organizations, such as the IMF and World Bank, I'm sure anybody here has ever read a book by Noam Chomsky. They might know about some of the things that the organizations did, either intentionally or unintentionally, that ended up creating yet more poverty as a result of loaning money. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with the microloan situation. I think that one of the differences here that lies ahead of us is that for the first time, and I know it sounds cliche or even tacky for me to use that word, for the first time, we actually have a technological system that allows for decision-making and consensus. And that's really what modern decision making is about, right? It's about coming to a consensus. You and me or the rest of us all coming to agreements that the world is round, right? Instead of flat, which I hope everybody agrees on that.
Still in some places is debated, but continue talking.
Right. So we now have a technology system that allows us to form consensus. And I know this isn't the topic of conversation here, but blockchain is being used by companies that are trying to develop actual voting systems right now, even identity systems, medical ID systems, because you can store it in such a way that nobody centrally owns that, right? So I can't say nobody is ever going to end up in a situation whereby they own money to a network. And that is possibly going to end up creating a situation of poverty. That's impossible. Well, maybe it is possible. But I think now the difference is that we have a system that's much more accountable. And I guess part of your question is asking, how do we look out for the pitfalls, right? How do we look out for somebody that's trying to manipulate us into that similar situation back 15, 20 years ago now? I guess the key thing is obviously knowledge. And it's great that we have the internet, but the internet can also be a spawn of disinformation as well as knowledge. I'm not going to say become a programmer. I don't know. Unika, do you have any advice here?
I feel like it's amazing that we're talking about this because it is a very, you know, complicated topic and also very important conversation to be had. You know, how we can ensure that the new systems that we're developing right now are actually, you know, more fair and equitable. And already, you know, I'm seeing there's a lot of people that are looking into the blockchain cryptocurrency space from the outside in, and they see that there is things under the surface they don't want to see, you know. So how do we ensure that these decentralized blockchains that we're creating are actually fair, and people who need access to, you know, financing can use them to their advantage? So I feel like this is something that's very open-ended. Only time will tell. But we absolutely need to talk about this, and we need more good people engaged, you know, in working on this, because
yes.
The way finance works right now is not, like, it could be better, you know, it definitely, there is a lot of problems with it. So if we have a chance to create and change the world, we shouldn't be sitting on the sidelines, you know, asking, you know, oh, you know, is somebody else going to do this? No, we should be the ones trying to shape the world in a way that we want to see it made, because otherwise it's going to fall onto other people who, you know, might not have the best interest in mind of, you know, peoples of this world. So that's only thing that I can say. It's just, it comes down to us to reshape the world. And one example that I like to kind of give people, especially when they just sort of get into the blockchain space, is that the immensity of the innovation of blockchain is really, it's astounding. And one simple example to speak to this is that it all comes down to the history of ledgers. You can record information once, and that's kind of, you know, it goes back to the beginning of, you know, human written language, that somebody would record a record that you know, there's, I don't know, there was a bushel of corn was sold or something like that. You know, that was recorded. That is just a, you know, written record. What comes after is basically a double entry accounting, where you have things recorded as credit and debit. So it has those two records. So you can say, you know, I gave you something, and something was, you know, something passed hands. Right now with blockchains, that's essentially the biggest innovation, is that we can have a ledger that has a third field, which is essentially a sort of auditing field, because the network agrees that something changed hands. So before blockchains, this was not possible. We couldn't have a system that was decentralized, that was depending on that depended on the community to vouch that something changed hands. So what we found ourselves in a situation where a lot of banking is extremely skewed, because we're, you know, working with credit cards, we're working with money that's essentially digital, because, you know, I don't remember last time using money, especially now with COVID, we're all using cards, so where's the money, right? But the validators of these transactions are central entities, their banks, their credit card companies, whereas with blockchains, it all comes down to the entire community to validate these transactions. So I feel personally, just by understanding how this system works on such a basic level, that this provides tenants for a fairer system. However, how we choose to evolve this system is all up to us. It hasn't been evolved yet. This is extremely early.
Yeah, that was beautiful, Yunica.
Thank you.
I would simply add to that participate. Participate is the way, it's always been the way, you know, to do direct action when the government isn't responding, and the only way is to put yourself out onto the street and disobey, right? When a company is doing something, you know, that you think might be, you know, a human rights abuse, not only to speak up, but to boycott. You know, there's all sorts of different ways to participate in society. And voting, of course, in a democracy is considered foundational. But there's so many other different ways to participate. And I think that's one of the beauties of blockchain and decentralized technologies, is that it is providing another technological means for us all to participate. And it's by participating, both in the decision-making process, of how the technologies are evolved and developed, which companies are, you give your time to, you entrust with your cash or your valuables or what so be it. Those are all incredibly important decisions. So participate.
Thank you so much for those really thoughtful answers. I did have a second question, and then I'll hop off here. Did y'all have any thoughts, speaking, you know, of that transparency of transaction history on these new projects that are essentially privatizing that transparency and making transaction history closed?
Yeah, I can speak to that because it's actually a very challenging thing right now. Right now, the Ethereum network, as it stands, is not very scalable. And what I mean by that is it's very difficult to make a lot of transactions happen very fast. And that's because it's kind of like democracy. Democracy is slow, right? All you have to do is, look what's happening, in some sort of bureaucratic room, and you'll see that decision making there happens very slowly. Well, it's the same thing with Ethereum, because now all of a sudden it's a whole bunch of computers around the world and a whole bunch of people around the world participating and making transactions happen. It slows things down. The second reason it's not very scalable is the transaction fees, so the gas costs, like we were talking about. And so what we've seen happen as a result of that is a lot of companies trying to take some of the transactions or batches of transactions, very, very, very small transactions, and put them onto side chains. There are all sorts of different ways of which you can account and you can audit those transactions still, even if they're taken off the main net and then brought back onto the main net. And there are different companies, including us, that are working on ways of doing that. It doesn't mean that all transactions are going to move away from the main net. And also, I should mention that Polkadot and other blockchain frameworks are working on solutions to the scalability that don't involve moving to side chains. You might be referring to some companies, that are specifically financially focused or focused on the traditional finance sector. those responsible for XRP. There are definitely instances in which operating a blockchain on a centralized system makes sense, because all you're doing is, say, using it for auditing maybe something that's happening on the mainnet, or you're using it to perform some particular function for a video game or something of the sort. We do have to be very careful about centralized blockchains when the issue at stake is people's finances, people's actual, wealth. We should be concerned about how and in what manner in which they are essentially programmed. One thing that's very important to pay attention to is white papers. And I know nobody wants to read a white paper, but I would actually encourage a lot of people to take a look at white papers of different companies right now, and to actually seek out their community representatives of different companies and to really try to ascertain how some of these companies plan to operate, because as we saw in 2018, there were a number of bad actors, and this is real life. There are going to be bad actors, and we have to be very cautious about activity that happens off main nets, for sure.
I just wanted to quickly say that there are use cases for private blockchains or the transactions not being visible for everybody. I think a lot of what Hyperledger was working with was private because they envisioned, their system to be used more internally by companies. So if you have one company that needs to maintain sort of the privacy of their information, it might be very different than, you know, having a public record that everybody can view. So that's, so I feel like definitely there are use cases for, you know, those transactions being private. But I think, yes, like performing batch transactions off the chain will definitely impact the way the, you know, information is stored. So I think that we need more solutions. I'm super excited to see, you know, how Polkadot is going to be working and getting around some of these issues as well, because I feel like Ethereum is great, but again, it just needs to be faster. It just needs to be faster. And like Tom mentioned, you know, that kind of decentralized system is just not fast enough. And like, you know, even very early in this discussion, we were mentioning gas costs. And that's the reason for this immense gas costs that, you know, everybody's experiencing, because everybody wants something to happen on Ethereum chain. And right now NFTs are blowing up. And if you want your transaction to happen, you're going to have to pay more. So there is, you know, there is this fine balance between some, you know, things being fully decentralized, but then getting extremely expensive on the other end, or being really slow. So it's like, you know, that little slider that says, you know, fast, good, and what was the third one? I forget. It's late. Do you remember? I'm sure you guys know that one. Tom, do you remember that one? It's like, if you can have, like, you can only have the two.
Oh, the triad? Oh, yeah. From my creative agency days. Good, bad, or fast, right?
Yeah.
Or so, no, good, cheap, fast.
Yeah. So you can only have two. So I feel like it's the same with the Ethereum network, you know? once you move off the chain, then all the, you know, privacy and all that stuff, it's not the same anymore. So you can only kind of, you have to pick your battles. And I feel like there's, you know, nobody came up with a perfect system.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I mean, and also to the organizers of the conference, it's really cool to be able to ask these questions to people like y'all. So thank you again.
Camille, I'm so glad, and I just love your usage of the word y'all. Can I just throw that out, please? I'm Southern, so I use the word y'all pretty much in every other sentence, pretty much.
Yeah, that came when I moved to Texas a few years ago, so.
Nice. So let me, and stay up here with us, Camille. Let me ask you a question, Thomas. With the way things are going, I'm just curious. Do you ever foresee a sort of a DeFi space where instead of crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, I guess it would be a similar place like a Kickstarter, but instead of investing in a company, they're loaning, people could loan a person money based on their crypto assets at a percentage rate, where if they defaulted, they receive the asset. That could be with NFTs, it could be with Ethereum, Bitcoin, or anything else. I think a crowdsourcing platform like that would be huge. I'm just thinking outside of the box here. What do you think?
Somebody's already working on it.
Yeah, well, there you go. I honestly think that is, you know, as you're sitting here talking about that, I'm like, this is the perfect opportunity for people to invest in people and to have an incredible smart contract. The other side thing that I want to ask you about that, and I was talking about this with my buddy who's the CTO of his company. He's a smart guy. And, you know, as I was talking about smart contracts, it's really cool because it's the collective making the decision. It's kind of a yes or no, and it sort of is once it's written. It either happens or it doesn't. The bad thing about that, which he pointed out, which I thought was interesting, is sometimes, Thomas and Eureka and Camille, something may happen. Hey, look, I need to go to the bank. Look, let me tell you guys, here's what's happened in my life. I had this sort of catastrophe. I've got these three things that happened all at once. Can you please give me some forgiveness just for a little bit of time? I need to get some things in sort. That sort of thing, how does that sort of convert into this space? Does it convert into the space?
Yeah, that's actually a very tricky topic right now in the DeFi space. And we actually have had issues surrounding debts and repayment for a while. One of the truths of the blockchain space is that a lie can be immortalized, just like the truth. So if, for instance, if a fraudulent transaction happens, that gets recorded, and so the lie will forever be, you know, in a decentralized blockchain, will forever be kind of crystallized, right? So there are issues. The reason why I bring this up is because one of the biggest issues that we're going to have to resolve in the blockchain space, a lot of people are working on this, but is essentially trying to negotiate settlements, right? So something goes wrong, you know, there have been blockchains that have been forked because a fraudulent transaction happened, a hack happened, and a portion of the community will go, but that happened, and that's the truth. So we need to record that, and that needs to be the way it is. And then a whole other bunch of people go, well, but I lost a whole bunch of money. Can't we just, you know, it's just code, right? Can't we just rewrite history here? And so there's, you know, the evangelists that say, God, no, right? And then there are the, you know, obviously those that have, you know, are sympathetic or have lost lots of capital due to a hack or what so be it. And they want to rewrite history. And that's a very interesting thing. So the same thing applies to, you know, I can't repay the loans, you know, something really bad has happened. You know, who do I negotiate with? It's a computer system, right? Well, not exactly. There are people behind the network, right? So there are various different projects people are working on to try to create settlement or negotiation in these systems. And there are definitely some interesting solutions out there, but it's definitely one of the tougher parts about this type of system.
And the let's not even get into the legality of this. I mean, who would you even, where would you even file if there was a complaint? Like, whose jurisdiction would that even be? that's another, but by the way, Thomas, I want to know who's working on CrowdFi. I think that really is interesting. I think that's a win-win for anybody involved. It's a win-win. Going back to my original thought, let's connect offline. I want to know more what you know. But let me ask you the legal question. I mean, I know you're not an attorney. I mean, Jesse's down there. But what how would that even play out? I'm just curious.
It's tricky because some of this falls under securities. Some of it falls under, different jurisdictions and if there's a lawyer here, probably know better than me. I do often go to my lawyer for these types of discussions. But one thing I will say is that smart contracts are recognized by the EU right now as legally binding contracts. And I'm not too sure, I'm not privy to which states have necessarily recognized that right now. However, I imagine smart contracts will be adopted as legal tender at some point in time, most places, but probably depending on the framework as well.
There's a something else. I haven't heard much talk about it lately, but I might look into it a little bit more after this conversation. So I remember the EOS platform, they were working with something called the Ricardian smart contract.
Yes.
So that Ricardian contract is actually reversible. It's it works a little bit different than a smart contract on Ethereum. But again, like we were looking into the EOS platform like a year and a half ago, a little bit more, and then we sort of decided to stick with Ethereum. Then we looked more into Polkadot. So I'm not super familiar with what they're working on right now and how that is executing, but it would definitely be something worth looking into.
Yeah, that's extremely interesting to me, because, and you know, one of the other things is there isn't, specifically in the US, there is not a lot of precedence on cases for a lot of these NFTs, and I'm not trying to derail off of the DeFi, but specifically around DeFi and other things, there's no precedence, right? There's no rulings.
Well, so this is really relevant only because, like, DeFi, like we said, the basis of cryptocurrency is contracts at the database level, right? That's the real kind of revolution taking over here. It's not just the idea that Bitcoin is a hugely speculative new gold, right? And that's great and it's fantastic and what so be it. But to be able to store contracts at a database level means that now, you know, governmental processes, banking processes, financial, legal, all sorts of processes can now be handled in a secure and decentralized fashion without central bodies. So this does impact law and the entire legal system.
On a side note that's unrelated, but I'll say this just because I think it's interesting. I think Bitcoin has replaced gold.
Are there any traders in the room?
I'll tell you, it's a very controversial topic, but I think Bitcoin has absolutely made gold obsolete.
Well, people were saying that back in 2017, so I'm not going to...
Well, I think it comes down to why something has value, right? Like, why gold has value? Because people
say... Gold has value because it doesn't rust in the ocean, and it's a quote-unquote limited resource.
Pieces for gold, right? Like, it actually is an excellent conductor. There's so many things, like, of all things, it's actually pretty. People want it as jewelry, you know. There's all sorts of reasons why something has value. There's other valuable metals that you know, are even rarer and more expensive than gold, but it just is, people give things value, and people decided that Bitcoin has value, and that's why it became this sort of, I think at this point, you know, a cat is out of the bag. Like, it is a value store. I don't think it ever is going to be, you know, I remember a couple of years ago there was a discussion like, oh, is Bitcoin ever going to be used like cash? No. I don't think that's going to happen unless some major, major changes happen, which would involve the fork. And I think that Bitcoin is what it is. It's the first, you know, the OG of blockchain.
but you know, what's interesting, Unika, what I like about the NFTs, okay, is they are digital stamps of an original something. We have baseball cards, we have other things, memorabilia from movies. There's lots of things that have physical tangibility that have value, but NFTs give stamps to digital things. And I really wasn't trying to derail you, Thomas, and I'm bad about that. But it's super interesting to me, because a lot of what the cryptocurrencies really do is, I mean, this really isn't relevant to our conversation, but the one thing that you can't do with gold is if I have an amass of wealth in gold, I can't get on a plane and fly to Costa Rica with my wealth in gold. I just can't do it. But I can get on a plane with 24 words in my pocket. It changes everything. It's really, really interesting. And so the idea of DeFi, decentralized finance, and what we were talking about earlier about CrowdFi, I just made up that word. Is that the name of the company, by the way? That would be incredible if it was. Is it?
Is it? I would be really jealous because I just came up with that. But that would be like really like those sorts of ideas of returning the power to the decentralized people to it's the greatest correction of power I think we've ever seen in our lifetime. And it's so interesting to me to hear you talk about some of that and you and Yunica sort of share your opinions on this. It's really interesting, isn't it?
I think Brett, you're correct. We are living at the dawn of something and the dusk of something. I hope, God willing, that this pandemic ends and that we can have some return to normalcy. But
because you,
I guess,
not getting online anytime soon with those words in the pocket if that doesn't end.
But hopefully out of this, you know, hopefully this is a phoenix, right? Hopefully the out of the ashes, there will be a new opportunity. And I hope that it comes for musicians and creators now. And that's what Yunica and I have been hoping for the last few years. I know, Brett, you're so pumped and excited, and I can just feel your enthusiasm, and it's amazing. Yeah, the one of the linchpins here is that I remember sitting in a conference in 2018, and there's just this one scenario that a guy working on, it's not actually a blockchain, it was an octa chain. Without getting into the details as to what an octa chain is, I'll leave that to just sit and fester in people's minds. But he modeled the scenario of the future. That I think it was one of the first times where I was just sitting there, and beyond the conversations, you know, like the bar speak and stuff that I had with friends and, you know, the world that we kind of envisioned, I think he kind of created a very practical everyday scenario that made sense to me as to how blockchain is going to change the world that we live in. And he described a scenario where imagine you get up in the morning and you get to your car. And your car, of course, is, you know, this is the future, right? So it's an AI-driven car, right? So your car is going to drive you to work. And while you drive to work, you maybe look at some of your, you know, your how your ETH is doing, how your, you know, your polka dot is doing, so on and so forth. And you decide that your car today should be doing some work for you. So you decide your car now is going to be picking up some people for work. And you kind of allotted a certain amount of time that it has to do that because you're going to be at work for, say, 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, right? So you drive, you pull into work, right? The car pulls you into work, right? Your car, call it Ruby, right? So Ruby pulls you into work, and then you get into work, and now your car has options. It can go out and accept contracts, just like an Uber driver, to pick up other people that need rides. And it can do that because those are smart contracts delivered and determined by AI and the blockchain. So now it can go out and it can pick up a number of people and it can actually earn you cash while you're at work. Okay, so now you get out of your car, or out of your work, sorry, and you get back into your car after you're done your day of work. It knows, you know, exactly when it needs to be in the parking lot, and it arrives, and you get in your car, and now you go home. And now imagine that as you're driving home, your car is actually in a pretty, you know, a pretty tough spot. There's a lot of traffic. Your car now has the ability to negotiate on your behalf, right? On your behalf, because this car is autonomous, but it's still working on your behalf, is capable of making agreements with other cars to clear the lane so that you can make your way home for a fee, of course, right? So now you make your way home, you get into your abode, you look at your, you know, how your ETH, et cetera, is doing, and you're like, oh, I actually made a little bit of profit today. Now I can make sure that my vehicle has the option to spend a certain amount of ETH to do what? But to charge itself. So now your car goes out to the charging station and by itself decides how much it had, you know, it's allotted to spend within a given week or a given time frame, and it charges itself and comes back home so that the next day you can start your cycle again. So what this scenario does is it shows that we're going to be able to have technology do work for us in a way that is autonomous, but in a way that's an economic actor on our behalf. And that's really what an NFT is. It's something of an asset that exists within an economic system, but it's an actor on your behalf. And that's what's really cool and fascinating, especially as AI starts to advance and integrate with blockchain technologies. So sorry, I don't know where that came from.
No, that
came from I work with you.
Me and Yanika love that.
No, it's just yeah. I just wanted to say that, you know, to reminisce about my earlier point about the infinite royalties that I made right in the beginning, right? That's essentially what we're talking about. And we know it sounds like sci-fi, but like with blockchain and cryptocurrencies and everything that's been happening over the last, you know, number of years, it does feel like you're living in the future and you are there to influence this future.
But, you know, I think we're looking at this. I think where we are now with NFTs and even DeFi, I think we are, and I've said this a few times in other rooms, I think we are essentially in the stage of AOL internet. Okay.
Absolutely.
I think that's where we are. And I don't think it is near what we think it can be. And I don't think that the players and the creatives, the CrowdFi boys that I invented in my head that apparently are real now, I don't think any of these entities are where have taken us to where these can go. What you just described, by the way, Thomas, sounds like Elon Musk's sort of Tesla cars. I mean, imagine a car that actually could go be an Uber for you while you're asleep. Like, that's technically what Tesla could do. With an upgrade, with an update patch, that kind of stuff is so interesting. That's where technology is going in. And you're talking about an NFT that is basically your advocate. What an interesting way to put it. So all of this is extremely exciting. We're not there. We are at the infancy. So it really boils down to people like you and Yanika and us who are in this to be creative and create what we want this to be. That's the exciting part, right?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yanika, I think we've talked about a lot. What would you like to add to this? We're nearing our closure. If there's something you'd like to add, I want to give you that opportunity.
No, I think it was a great conversation. Honestly, what I want to really say right now, I want to do shout out to Abby, because I've been going in and out of the NFT music conference rooms today, and I see him, you know, leading the conversation, and he's still on here, and I'm like, when do you sleep? So I think that it's been like an absolutely wonderful day just hearing everybody's opinion about you know, NFTs and music and all sorts of different topics. And yeah, thank you so much for organizing this, and thank you so much for having us. I think this is fantastic, being able to, you know, I would have never expected that in the middle of, you know, COVID times when I'm cooped up in my house, that I would be having the same vibes that, you know, I was having 2 years ago by going to different conferences and talking to people about all this stuff. So thank you so much for pulling that off and being here and having us.
Yeah, and thank
you. Oh, no, Thomas, thank you. You're more than welcome. And thank you, Abby, for putting this together, this amazing conference. You have brought some amazing industry insight and technical expertise, you and Yanika. I'm just somebody who researches a little bit, invests a little bit. I'm a fanboy of the things that y'all create, right? there's that, y'all see, I told you it was going to come out eventually. So I love the space. It's so interesting. And it can be, you know, I'm a huge fan of community. I'm a huge fan of empowering people. It's really in my soul. So anything that sort of ties those principles absolutely wins my soul. And that's what I love the most about decentralized entities, DeFi, blockchain. It's all so new, but I think there's really two types of people. There are those that are aware of it, and there are those who are aware of it and embrace it and are on board with it. And there are those that are, it's just going to happen to them. Because I think it really is going to be the future. I don't think there's a way around it.
There's no way anymore.
No, we're through the looking glass. So
you know, with more financial institutions adopting Bitcoin, and we have not yet seen, and that is now, that's gone from crazy people on the internet to, well, maybe it's worth something, to this is an asset you can invest in by massive institutions.
But
then,
you know,
it's only,
I just want to tell you a little anecdote. Like way back when, 2018, every single conference that we went to had representatives from banks in it. And you're like, you want to talk to people who are, you know, working with blockchain, doing whatever they're doing, crazy stuff. And every single person that you talk to are like, oh, I work for this bank. I work for this bank. I work for this bank. I'm like, is this like, oh, like, that's essentially what was happening. So, you know, the institutions, they might be, you know, getting into it right now, but they've been around for a while trying to, snooping around, seeing what's happening, you know, because I guarantee you every single bank in the world that is worth something has their own blockchain division working on this stuff. Because they
don't. That's interesting. You know, Yanika, that's really interesting you've said that. I don't want to say spread any rumors, but in some of the other channels that I like to just lurk in, I'm 99% a lurker on this, on a Clubhouse, but major corporations have rumored to have already purchased a lot of, or some of their balance sheet in specifically Bitcoin. It's really interesting. We are seeing a very rapid adoption of these currencies and what they do. And when people just put their foot in the water, it changes the game because it's so much more than what you think when you start. And Thomas, I think what you and Yanika have talked about here today about NFTs, DeFi, loans, all of these different things, it's just the beginning. And Thomas, we're going to have to have another conversation after this privately, because I need to know what's going on. You know some things, and I this is my space. I love it, and I want to learn as much as I possibly can.
Right on.
So I want to thank you, Thomas, and you, Yanika, for coming and sharing so much valuable insights in the space of DeFi artists, how they can get in it, and also explaining NFTs, gas, and a little bit of the basics before we jumped into the meteor subject. I've learned a lot. I think it's really interesting, and I want to learn more. Maybe we can do this again in another at another time and sort of expand on this, because there's a lot here. Last words to you, Thomas and Yanika, if you want to say anything before we end this.
No, just thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. And yeah, we can do this again sometime. Absolutely. If you have any more questions, just hit us up. You know where to find us.
Totally. Yeah. And for those that are interested, we're part of the company User, YUSER. You can check out our website at user.co. And we do actually now have our own club on Clubhouse, and we have a Discord channel. And we just launched our first, what we claim to be the first NFT social app, which is in the App and Play Store, of which you can get invite codes for. So yeah, thanks guys. Thanks,
how would someone thanks, get Brad. An invite code to that, Thomas? If somebody wants to be a part of that.
Get into our Discord or follow us on Twitter. We're at User on Twitter, YUSER.
Yeah, I can already see that some people send me DMs, and I'll take a look at them tomorrow, and I'll just send everybody codes, because tonight it's really late. So thank you so much.
No, guys. Perfect. You may see me join Thomas and creep around in there. I'm a Discord guy.
Hey, Discord's awesome.
Indeed. Okay. I love it. Y'all are awesome. Thanks for all this. I can't thank you enough. I want to particularly thank everybody from the 808 Wave, Abhi, for putting this on. If you haven't yet, follow the 808 Wave as well. This has been amazing. So I want to thank everybody. And we'll see you in the hallway.